You're listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.
This for Italy to win it, Jorginho style. They are in the final. Their run goes on. The hardest of tasks.
When you need a cool head, I mean, that wasn't cool from Jorginho. That was ice cold.
We have our first finalist after a gripping night of football that went all the way.
Yeah, more penalty drama at Euro 2020. Heartbreak for Spain, delight for Italy.
But who will join the Azzurri in the Wembley showpiece?
Both England and Denmark are hoping to reach a fairy tale final.
Now Mayo, it's a delightful ball in. It is a brilliant finish. Kasper Dolberg makes it two for Denmark.
Brinker making a change. It'll come for Kane. Harry Kane. And England are off to an absolute flyer.
Welcome to the show presented by Qatar Airways. I'm Rob Daly and I'm joined by my regular co-host Chris Parrott. Chris, hello.
What a night.
What a night. And we have our UEFA reporter Lindsay Hooper. Hello as well to you, Lindsay.
Great to be here. What a game.
What a game. And what a penalty from Jorginho, Lindsay, to win it for Italy.
So cool. I think in commentary it was called ice cold, and it really was. He's done it for Chelsea and he did it for Italy tonight.
Never thought he was going to miss. And Rob, those celebrations and that contrast on the Wembley pitch at the end. You had Chiellini, who looked like a kid at Christmas, thankfully, throughout the whole game. You had Pedri in tears for Spain after he put in another magnificent performance. You had a lovely moment for Leonardo Spinazzola, who is injured, when Lorenzo Insigne came running onto the pitch with a shirt with his name on the back. He was wearing it backwards, and that was very nice. And then you had Roberto Mancini coolly taking it all in. I watched him in the shootout. He couldn't watch it, Rob. He was marching behind his coaching staff, just hoping somehow that his tide were going to go through, and they did.
Well, let's get into it then. This is how Italy made it to the Euro 2020 final.
Here goes Emerson. He might get there first. He has got there first. Scrambling from Spain. They survive. And under pressure again here. And again. And Dani Olmo defied by the goalkeeper. Half-time at Wembley. It's Italy 0, Spain 0. Picked up here by Chiesa. Oh! Sensational in the semi-final.
Talk about a goal against the run of play.
Alvaro Morata does it for Spain. What a story that is, from the bench into the limelight.
Conor Fiala, he steps forward.
We go to penalties, 1-1 after 120 minutes at Wembley. Here he comes, and Italy are very close. Morata's missed the penalty. This for Italy to win it, Jorginho style. They are in the final.
Hop, skip and a jump, and he took the penalty, Jorginho, that sealed it 4-2 on penalties after a brilliant 120 minutes of football at Wembley. Let's go to Italy then and speak to one of our reporters who's been covering the Azzurri throughout the tournament, Vieri Capretta. Vieri, welcome on to the show.
Hello, everybody.
How was that?
Well, where to begin? I think Spain were probably the better side, but it's football, isn't it? I mean, you have to win one way or another. And in 2008, Spain started their amazing winning streak, going on to win 2 Euros and a World Cup with a penalty shootout against Italy. And Italy hopefully did the same tonight. Well, they're definitely at Wembley on Sunday night. And I think, to be honest with you, what we've seen throughout the tournament, it's deserved.
Vieri, be honest. Italy in their history have had some pretty heartbreaking losses on penalty shootouts. What were you thinking ahead of that first spot kick, and particularly after Locatelli missed, of course?
You know, my first thought went actually to the last week when Busquets missed against Switzerland and then Spain won. Mm. I thought, well, they missed it and then won it, so why don't we do the same? And you're right, yeah, Italy did lose a lot of times on penalties, but my first memory obviously is 2006 in the final against France, winning the World Cup. So I was always positive. I made a prediction on the 10th of June before the tournament started that Italy would get to the final and play England, and then England would win it. But I mean, so far so good. And it was absolutely nerve-wracking. I think when Italy went 1-0 up, I genuinely thought we could do it. But then Spain did play better football and they deserved to draw, and you needed something like penalties, which is a bit random. And in the end, the Azzurri made it.
Well, let's hear some of the reaction. This was the players at full time at Wembley after the shootout going over to their supporters, and there were many of them at Wembley Stadium. Tremendous celebrations in the stands, on the pitch. It was like a home game at times for Italy at Wembley. And Vieri, for a nation that didn't even qualify for the World Cup 3 years ago, how much does this mean now to be at a major final once again?
It's incredible. I mean, me as an Italian, but I think every Italian, there's nothing that brings the people together like football. And I mean it. And it might not necessarily be a positive thing, but it definitely feels like a positive thing. And missing out on a major tournament in 2018 was absolutely heartbreaking. And we just realized once again what it means for Italy to be in a Euro final, to win a semi-final on penalties. I can hear people celebrating in the streets, cars going round. I mean, it's crazy. It was crazy against Belgium 3-4 days ago. It's mental tonight. And I mean, it doesn't really matter what happens on Sunday. This is what Italy and the Azzurri and the fans needed, especially after missing out on something like the World Cup.
Lindsay, you've been at the fan parks in London where there are many Italians. Do you get the sense, and what kind of sense were you getting from Italian people as the team progressed through this tournament?
They have been packing out the football village. They've been making you very, very proud, I can tell you, because they've been out in good voice, in good force. I left with the atmosphere electric this evening. I honestly think that there'll be so many fans there at Wembley on Sunday. It might not feel like it will be a home tournament if England get that far, or for Denmark anyway, they would certainly be outnumbered. So the Italians certainly showing their support, and lots of them in London.
Yeah, and there were so many at Wembley. Vieri, can we speak about Giorgio Chiellini, who didn't take a penalty but had a great game? And there was a moment before the shootout when it was as if Jordi Alba tried to, I don't know if he tried to claim that he had won the toying costs and the penalty should be taken at the Spanish end. But Chiellini was like he was playing five-a-side with a mate and basically picked him up and said, no, it's at the Italy end. His enthusiasm for football is infectious, isn't it?
He was picking him up like it was a five-a-side game.
Exactly. Squeezing him.
Yeah.
but I mean, Vieri, he must be adored in Italy.
Well, absolutely. I think that shows the experience as well. Having a laugh in that moment is what you need. You know, it's just kind of like, hey guys, I know most of the Italy squad is youngsters, but hey, we've been here before. Look, it's just football, isn't it? And he did that with Jordi Alba. We all saw it. We all had a laugh. And then you go to the penalty shootout. You miss the first penalty with one of the youngsters, Locatelli, and then you end up winning it. I'm not saying Chiellini did it all, but you know, it's one of those little things that does make a difference. And I think the game Italy played tonight was very different to the one they played against Belgium. I think against Belgium, yes, as I said in last time round, there was great all-style defending in Chiellini and Bonucci. Tonight, it was pretty much only all-style defending. There wasn't that element of dominance in midfield because Spain are great at recovering possession. They're great at putting pressure. They've got a high tempo and they're probably better than Italy at actually, you know, holding the ball. So Italy suffered in midfield, and then that's where you need someone like Chiellini. Yeah, we conceded once. Morata knows Chiellini very well. They play together at Juventus. But I think overall, you know, the captain was amazing and he was definitely a difference maker, both for what he did on the pitch and also his leadership.
I definitely think it does do something to the other players, doesn't it? They just see him looking relaxed as if he doesn't have a care in the world. And maybe it just does take that edge off one of the most dramatic moments in their careers. Brilliant penalties after the Locatelli saved effort from the likes of Belotti, Bonucci, Bernardeschi. And then we were all saying, oh, who will it be? We can't remember who's on the pitch.
Jorginho.
And then you saw Jorginho and you're like, oh, OK, they're in very good hands. Look, Vieri, who did Italy want in the final?
Well, my prediction was England, and I think it would be pretty epic to face England in a final at Wembley. But then again, Denmark have an amazing story with them this tournament. So I think either way, it'll be one of those epic nights. I have to say, on paper, Denmark seem like an easier side. Can I say that? But I think it would make for something, you know, a night to remember if Italy do face England. So I think either way, it will be incredible. And, you know, don't get me wrong, Italy have been playing great football this tournament. They deserve to be in the final, in my personal opinion, but it wasn't an easy one. So already getting to the final, I think, deserves a round of applause.
Vieri, thanks for coming on the show as always.
Thank you. Ciao.
Vieri Capretta from Italy there. Great to get his reaction. Okay, should we, Lindsay, Chris, should we break down the game?
Yeah. How long have we got? Okay. I mean, it went all the way.
All right, well, let's go with the team selection first of all. There was some really interesting stuff here, Chris, in terms of who Italy and Spain played in their attacks.
Yeah, well, so we knew Spinazzola was out. And Emerson was the guy who was picked at left back, and Chiesa was picked over Berardi. I think the biggest surprise was when the Spain 11 came through and there was no Alvaro Morata in the 11. And we thought initially that Oyarzabal was going to play as a false nine. Actually, when the game then started, it was Dani Olmo who played in that position, and he had a fantastic night. Unfortunately, they missed a penalty, but he was really one of the stars, wasn't he, Lindsay? He was excellent. And after a very, very quick beginning from Italy, Spain then after about 10, 15 minutes seemed to think, well, hang on, no, we know how to keep the ball well. And slowly they made their way into the game.
They did. I think they were actually the better team in the first half. Italy did start the game well. They were full throttle. They hit the post, didn't they, early on. But Spain worked them out. And as Vieri pointed out, I think it was the midfield battle that was won. There was Busquets, Pedri and Koke, a bank of three against another bank of three for Italy, Barella, Jorginho and Verratti. And the Spaniards got the better of them. They were winning those midfield battles. A lot made of Pedri, if you were following social media this evening, and his pass completion rate. So I think we've all been across that.
But 100%, right, for most of the game.
Most of it. I think he dropped to 99% just by the end. But but Olmo, I mean, he had the game of his life. The thing I would say is he was so good at one point that he became a bit selfish on a couple of occasions, and you can't really deny him that because he was shining and he was obviously full of confidence and he was making things happen. But there were a couple of occasions where I was screaming, thinking, you know, you needed to play that ball, you needed to play the pass. But what an evening for him. I mean, the fact of the matter though, the two that made that equaliser ended up missing the penalties. It was Olmo's pass and Morata's goal, wasn't it? And it was them two that couldn't actually hit the ball in the back of the net when it came to that big pressure moment.
Yeah, and that was after, Rob, Italy had scored a magnificent opening goal.
They nearly scored before half-time, didn't they, against the run of play when Emerson banged one against the bar.
It sort of clipped the top of the bar. It looked like Unai Simon wasn't too concerned, but then you saw the replay and you thought, oh, that was quite close.
Yeah.
But Spain after half-time were the better team again. I think they looked the more likely. And then Italy scored an amazing counter-attacking goal, which started with Donnarumma picking the ball up and then running to the edge of his penalty area just as he got to the edge, rolling it out. But then he sort of carried on his run. And you looked at me and thought, you're in the middle of the pitch. What are you doing? But
I saw someone describe it like someone curling.
Yeah, you follow it. Or like 10-pin bowling. You're like, I just want to see where this one's going to go. And then it eventually, Insigne played a lovely ball with the outside of his foot. Immobile, you thought, is he going to be in on goal? Great challenge from Laporte, but the ball bounced back to Enrico Chiesa, who bent in an outstanding goal. And that had Italy 1-0 up. And then we were actually speaking and we were saying, well, how are Spain going to score against Bonucci and Chiellini and co? Because everything they tried, Italy seemed to be repelling it. And then, as Lindsay mentioned, Spain scored an amazing equaliser themselves.
Before we hear from a member of the Italy camp, Lindsay, you made the point to me while we were watching extra time that Spain, you know, I think many were surprised that Spain were the better team. Italy were favourites going into this. But it's a team that has grown in stature throughout the course of the tournament.
Yeah, I think they're actually reaching the peak just at the right time in the tournament. And when you were looking and you were watching, you're thinking, this is going to be them. I mean, my mind changed a few times in this game. I thought Spain were going to make it to the final, certainly in extra time. I thought they might score. And it felt like everything was working towards the final for them because they are another team, a little bit like England, who have grown as the tournament's gone on. Italy just in the end had too much for them. And I do think, when we were talking about Chiellini, he was fantastic in that penalty shootout. That is the sort of player you want by your side, isn't it? Laughing, joking, doing the hugging and squeezing. It relaxed everyone. And despite their record, it just swung. Even with that coin toss, you thought, right, it's over to Italy now.
Well, let's hear from, I think we can now say, Italy's main man in attack, maybe. Federico Chiesa scored a beautiful goal.
I cannot describe my emotion by words. You know, it was a tough match. Spain were great tonight, but now we're joining the final and we're coming back here on the 11th of July and we'll see. They were great. They have They have star players all around in the team. Every position, they were just great. But we fought until the end because we wanted to go through, and we did it.
He's such a great speaker as well, Chiesa. He also made a brilliant chance for Berardi in regular time. Only 23 years of age, the Juventus forward. Juventus forwards scoring at both ends of the pitch, in fact, with Morata scoring for Spain. Chris, in terms of penalties, Spain had already won a shootout at this tournament. So logic would just tell you, you know, when it's so close that, you know, they're near 50-50 situations that they wouldn't win this one.
Yeah, well, exactly. And they were chasing history because no team has ever won two penalty shootouts at the same Euro, and loads of teams have won one and then lost one. And I had this vision because he had another very, very good game and he is such a giant. I just thought, how do you beat Donnarumma from the penalty spot? Yeah. And in the end, he did make the save from Alvaro Morata's crucial penalty. And I don't know, sometimes you have a hunch, right? And normally in penalty shootouts, I'm entirely wrong. But I just had a hunch that Donnarumma was going to come up with at least one big moment.
There was that Salvatore Sirigu, the veteran goalkeeper, who's still part of the national team, sort of in his ear, pressing his temple to focus and just before the shootout.
You know, sometimes keepers, I don't think, like they know, they've got all the analysis, they've been told which way to go, and then you get some player coming up shouting in their face, please leave me alone, let me concentrate.
And Lizzie, they'll be buzzing now going into Sunday's final.
They will, and this was a big test as well to see how they were without Spinazzola. And Spinazzola has been a player of the tournament. I think between him and Raheem Sterling, it's been a toss-up, really. And with him out for 6 months now, Emerson stepped in, and I thought he did really well, actually. I mean, he hasn't got that attacking presence that Spinazzola had, but there were times that he got forward, and I think that they've shown now how they cope without him in the team, the fact that they can get through 120 minutes and come out the other side of a penalty shootout will give them great confidence going into the final on Sunday.
I can just see Chris, by the way, Lindsay, scrolling through Twitter, and the video of Chiellini around the coin toss is doing the rounds.
It's going to be quite popular, I think. I've just noticed quite how hard he did shove Jordi Alba in a joking manner. Don't you try and steal the end.
It's Jordi Alba's face, though, as well. He looks so serious.
Well, he was like refusing to leave the situation without Jordi Alba giving him a smile back.
I liked it from Jordi Alba thinking, now I'm going to try and blag it so we get it at the Spanish end. And Chiellini, the old wily veteran, no chance.
No, that's us. Okay, plenty more to come, of course. And we're heading back to Wembley ahead of the second semi-final. We speak to former players of both England and Denmark.
This is the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.
Well, there was all that music at full time at Wembley, and this is our reminder that the official UEFA Euro 2020 playlist is on all major music streaming platforms. Chris, you've had a trawl through the list.
Yeah, more than 5 hours of music, and if you're stuck in the 90s like me, some absolute belters. Blur Song 2, Can't Go Wrong, Bittersweet Symphony, and there is also some more modern stuff
There is. Okay, well, let's see what England midfielder Declan Rice has gone for from the playlist.
I'm going to have to say the classic Three Lions. I think it's just one of them songs where you listen to it, you know, now we're at a major tournament. The amount of times it's been played at a major tournament before, just the real buzz, the energy that it gives with the fans and see the people at home that are in the pubs and watching us. So I'm going to have to say, yeah, Three Lions. Especially for me listening to that as well, it definitely gives me a buzz and ready to go out there and perform.
Well, look, if you're in England right now, and of course England is hosting the semis in the final, you cannot ignore this song. And I've seen reports saying that Three Lions is set to go to number one again in the UK charts. Chris, you said this a few times.
Yeah, well, I think it was originally released in 1996 for Euro. I'm fairly sure at the FIFA World Cup in 98, there was a new song. It went to number one there. And at the FIFA World Cup 3 years ago, it was also number one.
Lindsay, you must have been hearing Declan Rice's favourite at the fan parks over and over again.
Yes, Anatomic Kitten now. Gareth Southgate, you're the one.
Oh, see, I would love to get you to do a rendition of it.
I'm sorry, but my singing voice is firmly in the closet for this evening.
Okay.
But, you know, I think Declan Rice, he gave the answer that everyone wanted to hear, didn't he, there? Three Lions, I mean, in terms of motivational songs, I'm sure that there are other songs that they listen to as well. But he gave the right answer.
We'll get Kasper Schmeichel's thoughts on that song as well very shortly on the show. To hear it and many others, search for the official Euro 2020 playlist on all major music streaming platforms. OK, to our second semi-final. England and Denmark have both had very different paths to the last four, and both have had very different experiences in their quarter-final ties.
And it has come to Delaney, who has put Denmark in front. Fabulous header from Thomas Delaney. Now Mayo, it's a delightful ball in. It is a brilliant finish. Kasper Dolberg makes it two for Denmark. And this time Schmeichel's beaten. And Patrick Schick has claimed another goal.
Paprenko making a change. It'll come for Kane. Harry Kane. And England are off to an absolute flyer. For sure. Delivers, and Harry Maguire, it's another goal for England at the start of a half. Shaw is going to set up another one, he has done. Kane again, he's got two, England have got three, and they're running riot in Rome. But England come again, with Mount's corner, and they come again, and they score, and would you believe, it is Jordan Henderson to top off the night.
Well, it was an unusually comfortable knockout win for England in the end of the season into the semi-finals. We'll hear from their manager, Gareth Southgate, in a moment. But first, the captain, Harry Kane.
Yeah, of course, it's a huge belief, growing in confidence game by game. I think we've got better game by game as the start of the group into the knockout. So, we're in a good way at the moment. But we also know that Denmark are a very good team and it's going to be a really tough game. So, yeah, we've got to be ready for the challenge. But, of course, the belief is there that we can try and reach our first European final. It's down to us to get the fans off their seat and get them cheering, get them singing. So, yeah, look, it's a big game, semi-final at our home stadium, which you don't have the opportunity to have that often. So we've got to use all those little details to our advantage, get them on our side, as I know they will be and have been. And, yeah, just obviously try and win, and hopefully we can be singing Sweet Caroline after.
We obviously played them twice in the autumn, and when we were preparing for that, we knew their record, we knew how difficult they'd been to beat, we knew that they've got some very good players, and I think they're better now than they were in the autumn. Obviously for them it was a big blow, not only to lose Christian as a player, but with everything that happened. But they've responded amazingly to that, and I think clearly there's an emotional tidal wave and connection with the fans through what happened, that sort of shared experience that will be very strong for them. We have to prepare well to beat a team who are tactically adaptable and who have some very good players and a great spirit about the way they play.
England have never reached the final of Euro. Gareth Southgate looking to lead his men to a historic occasion. Lindsay, you've been in the fan parks. Speaking to the England fans as well, what do you sense the mood is now going into this one?
I have, and I've got to go from the last experience, which was Trafalgar Square for the quarterfinal. And I think you even had Lee on the show here that I spoke to, who'd been following England for about 40 odd years, and he got really emotional and he was like, that's it, we're doing it now, we're going all the way. And I think emotional is the word that I would use. I spoke to another young lady as well called Jo, and she got teary prior to kickoff just speaking about this England team and the way they'd got her feeling. I think it's because there's sort of records and indicators here, aren't there? The fact that about all these clean sheets, there've been five in total now, and first time that they've had seven consecutive clean sheets in the whole of the England history, 149 years. And then there's the fact that the last time that England scored four goals in a knockout tie, it was the 1966 World Cup final. Yeah. And people were saying that to me at full time after Ukraine. They know their stats, the England fans.
They do. And you know what, Rob? You know, as you mentioned, they've never been to a Euro final. Their last major final was 1966. Now, that's 55 years ago. I had a quick look. 70% of the population of England are under the age of 55. So for the vast majority of people in their lifetimes, England have never reached a major final. All that can change at Wembley on Wednesday.
We will get more from the Denmark camp in a moment, but let's hear from a man who's played with England at four major tournaments. I'm delighted to say the former Chelsea attack midfielder Joe Cole joins us now. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Joe.
No problem. Great to be here.
You played at four major finals yourself. What are you making of this England team that's made it to another semi-final?
I've been banging the drum for this team for many, many years now. I think there's a wonderful story to be told once we win this tournament, because about 10, 15 years ago, the way we train players, the system changed. They looked at it and we started developing players and then we started winning youth tournaments. And, I feel like this is the end of a long story of 10, 15 years when the project changed and it finishes, culminates with these young players producing the goods. And I'm so excited, and everyone keeps telling me I will never get a better chance. I think this is going to be the norm now for us, because our system was broken for so long, in my opinion, the way we played, the way we approached international football and the type of players we developed. And now we're developing players just ready made for international football. So I'm so excited about it. I love it. And I've been banging the drum for these lads for 2, 3, 4 years now. I think they've been exceptional.
Love the optimism there, Joe. I think at the end of your international career, you overlapped with Gareth Southgate as well in the England squad. How important has he been to that change? And how important has he been, do you think, in this current tournament? His coaching has been spot on, hasn't it?
I played with Gareth when I first started with England, and he always impressed me just as a player, but not only as a player, but as a man as well, you know. And, you know, people scoffed when Gareth got the job from Sam Allardyce, you know, but you couldn't have thought of a better man to lead these young men effectively, because he's so stoic, Gareth. He's so, you know, he's a throwback character, if you like, you know. But and he's so intelligent, and his decisions are what he's methodical, he's well thought. I had a great seat just behind the bench against Czech Republic, so I was watching him how he interacted with Steve Holland and the staff, and how calm he was, and he just dealt with it brilliantly. And I think it's a great synergy he has with his players, a great connection and chemistry. And Gareth will go down. If he pulls this one off, which I think they will, I think he stepped into the shoes of the top English managers of certainly the last 20, 30 years.
Joe, I saw you playing England manager as well before the tournament, naming your England squad on British TV. And I think it sort of speaks to the kind of player you were, because you had not only the likes of Grealish and Foden and Saka, you even had Saka in there for whom many was a surprise. This was well in advance of the tournament. You also had James Maddison, you know, these creative attacking midfield players. Can you speak to Mason Mount, though, and a player who has become so important for Gareth Southgate in England?
It was actually a mishmash of all of our teams, me, Glenn Hoddle and Rio. And we had great fun doing it. And Mason would have been in any... If I had to pick the whole 11, Mason would have been would have been one of the first names on the team sheet. And people will talk about his fantastic technique, his goal scoring, his assists. He's, you know, he's the complete footballer. And to say that at his age, it's a massive compliment to him, but it's very unusual. You know, and again, I've been banging the drum for Mason Mount for many. We've had this argument countless times on telly when people didn't get it. You know, they thought he was Frank's pet project or something. And I was telling people, I've seen this kid live. I've watched him go through the ranks at Chelsea, and I knew he was a top player.
Joe, you got 56 caps for your country, and the semi-final is the hottest ticket in town. Do you, even you, though, have to scramble for one, or are you sorted out for Denmark?
I've begged, stolen, borrowed, and I'm going. you know, 56 caps for England don't mean nothing when it comes to getting a ticket for this game, for semi-final. But I'm happy to be there. I'm taking the family, and I'm really excited.
And what would it mean to an Englishman, to a former player, to the whole country, for England to reach the final? Their last one was in 1966.
I think what I've liked as well about this tournament in particular, like I've not played since 2010, my last game for England, so I've seen tournaments. I think the ex-players and the media have got behind this team more than I've ever known. Similar to 96, where the connection's there. You know, like, for instance, where I took my boys to watch the Germany game, and when Harry Kane scored his goal, you know, I got quite choked up about it. I was really a lovely moment with my two boys, because so much of my journey was I wanted to play for England, and it was in Italia 90 watching the semi-final against Germany. I can vividly remember that was something clicked in my head, right, I want to play for England. And then I went and played my career, never beat Germany, bit of a thorn in my side. And then my last game for England was the 2010 World Cup against the Germans. So I think when Harry popped that goal in against Germany, and having my boys there, it just felt special. And I just think for me, this team does feel special. And the everything about the vibe of the country is at the moment, where everyone is, you just feel like you sense there's something special in the air.
Okay, Joe, to finish then, Denmark themselves, the opposition, a player you know well, I imagine, Andreas Christensen is part of that team at the Chelsea defender. But how do you feel it's going to go? They are riding a tremendous wave of momentum right now.
They're a fantastic side. And I said the Ukraine game, I think, was going to be a very, without being disrespectful, I thought it was going to be an easy game to navigate for England. I thought the Ukraine had absolutely at the end of the line for them, and the scoreline reflected that. England produced the goods they had to do. It's a fantastic point. I think this game is very, very different. This game, I think, is more difficult for the lads than the final will be mentally, because everyone was Denmark semi-final, what an opportunity, but they're riding the crest of a wave. They've got the support not only of their own country, the whole of Europe and whole of the world because of the difficult circumstances they come through. They're the underdogs and they're a good side. Like, we can't get away from that. The system, Christensen at the back, I think, has been immense. Delaney and Højbjerg in midfield, as good a two a pairing as Declan and Calvin, I think they've done a fantastic job. The systems match up. I think England will match up with them. We're a better side. I'm going to be honest. We are the better side. But this is a more difficult game mentally and emotionally for the players than if we was to get through to the final against Spain and Italy. This is a tough one for us.
Okay, Joe, to finish then, you've already said you think England are going to win the whole thing. So can we at least get a score prediction for Denmark then?
Right. I think England win the game 2-1. I think it's a tight game. I'm expecting drama. Maybe even we fall behind in this one. But I have no doubt in the lads, in their character, in what they are as a group of players, that they'll come through that test.
Joe, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, guys. Thank you.
The former England attacking midfielder, Joe Cole, him and we've had David James on. They're fans, aren't they, fundamentally? They're so into it. Okay, we'll hear from the Denmark camp next. Goalkeeper Kasper Schmeichel in a moment. But first, their coach, Kasper Hjulmand, insists his side aren't going into the game as underdogs.
With the quality we have, with the results we have been having, the way we play, we try to take the initiative in the matches, whoever is on the other side of the pitch, and we will try to be proactive. We'll try to play with courage, and we always do that, and play forward and try to score the next goal. But of course, in a match like this at Wembley against England, we will be the team that may be underdog. I don't like underdog mentality, but we are for sure not the favourites, of course, but our mentality is not to play football like underdogs, just defending and hope. No, our mentality is try to take control and be proactive as much as possible.
And it has come to Delaney, who has put Denmark in front. Fabulous header from Thomas Delaney.
This group has always been special. We've said it for many years. It just came to light in a very dramatic way. But we've never been in doubt of the collective strength and the spirit that we have in this team. It's a unique experience playing with your national team. It's very, very different to playing with your club team. Every single player in this team, you know, can't wait to go on international duty.
That was Kasper Schmeichel, and he was also asked this by an English journalist at that press conference.
What would it mean to you guys to stop it coming home?
Has it ever been home? I don't know. Have you ever won it?
1966, it was home.
Well, was that not the World Cup?
He's got a point.
That's a great answer.
Lindsay, you've interviewed him a few times. He's no nonsense, isn't he, Kasper Schmeichel?
Oh, no nonsense. And I mean, even years and years ago when I interviewed him, he's always had such a mature head on his shoulders, very level-headed as well. So there won't be too many ebbs and flows from Kasper. He'll keep it pretty steady.
He will. And he's absolutely right. England haven't won the European Championship, and Denmark have in 1992. So absolutely spot on. And we can actually hear now from one of the men who did lead them to glory, that shock success, what, nearly 30 years ago, because Denmark's former defender, Morten Brun, who was part of the squad, joins us now on the show. Thank you very much for coming on.
Of course. I'm delighted to be with you.
So first of all, how excited are you ahead of this semi-final?
Well, as every single Dane, I'm very, very much excited about the way this whole tournament has been evolving for the Danish team after Eriksson's collapse in the first game and the following shock, the shock in the following days. Things have just turned out like a fairy tale, really. And the way the team was sent off from their hotels was just incredible. And there's really a country full of excitement looking forward to the semi-finals.
So a lot has been made of the emotional wave that Denmark have been riding ever since the awful incident with Christian Eriksen. But do you think in some ways that has overlooked some of the excellent performances that Denmark have actually put in on the pitch?
Well, I'm very happy that we have also played brilliantly, because there was a lot of emotion, of course, around the whole incident and around the game against Belgium. And after the Belgium team, you sort of felt that, okay, yeah, it's been an emotional ride, and the players, as human beings, have done absolutely brilliantly. But we're still stuck with two defeats and nothing more. So as a football man, I'm particularly happy that we have now that we started to play this win well and get results. And the game against Russia was fantastic in the way that it was celebrated. I mean, it felt like we'd won the whole thing already, and there was certainly a whole lot more excitement around the Danish team in the group stages than there were around the English team. So it has just felt that we've been liberated on so many different terms. That as you can probably feel in my voice, I'm also hit by it personally. It's been such a brilliant summer.
Morten, you were part of the 92 squad that beat the European champions, the Netherlands, in the semi-final, the world champions, Germany, in the final. Denmark, on this occasion, also underdog. So what was it like going into those big games as the team not expected to win?
Yeah, there were some similarities. This team, actually, when you take the present team man for man, it's a better team than we were in 1992. And there are similarities in the way that it was only in the third group game against France that we squeezed through, and then back then there were only eight teams in the final stages, so we went straight to the semi-finals. We were huge underdogs back then. As I accept the fact that we are underdogs against England, but back then there was a fantastic team spirit. It's fair to say, because we never ever expected to go this far. As you might remember, Yugoslavia had qualified ahead of us, so we just joined the tournament a week before it started. So it felt like a fairy tale. But in a similar way, this also feels like a fairy tale. I had the feeling before the tournament that this team could do well, but when we commentate, me and my co-commentator, when we commentated the game against Finland, and the first 40 minutes were dull. And then all of a sudden, our star player, the one player that everybody in Denmark agreed that that Eriksen is going to have a great tournament if we're going to progress. And then all of a sudden, you know, he was lying on the ground. The whole thing was shattered before it began. So coming back and then having reached this stage, we feel like we really feel that like we can fly. We feel like we have nothing to lose, and that might be our greatest advantage, that the English team must feel that they have a whole lot to lose against Denmark in a semi-final at their own stadium, whereas we have already exceeded our expectations.
And Morten, are you commentating on the semi-final?
Yes, I am.
What do you do in a big moment? Like, I think Andreas Christensen's goal, for example, is my favourite moment of the whole tournament. So are you the kind of commentator who goes absolutely crazy for, say, a last-minute winner against England, or do you keep it quite cool and composed?
With a last-minute winner against England, I'm not going to keep my calm. I'm usually pretty calm. That's what people think of me in Denmark as well. But it was a good personal experience for me witnessing and commentating the Christensen goal, because it was just like the whole country's emotions were just... Yeah. Or summed up in that very, very moment, because he's a very popular player in Denmark, because he's always a nice and a quiet guy. And we were proud that he'd won the Champions League, and he was such an unlikely scorer. And it was just a wonderful goal, the way he smashed it into the goal. And I don't think I've ever celebrated a goal this much as a commentator. So I'm ready for it, let's put it that way.
Yeah, we were actually jumping around the studio when that goal went in. Finally, Morten, can I get a score prediction, please?
Do you want me to predict the game?
Yes, please.
Well,
yeah.
we've had Joe Cole on, Morten.
Yeah.
We've had Joe Cole on, and he said England win. So what do you think?
Well, I think every dream has to end sometime. And I feel that England is a stronger team than Denmark. So as much as I hope for Danish victory, I expect England to win.
Wow. I thought you were going to go Denmark, Morten. But
No, I'm a realistic man.
Well, thank you very much for coming on the show, Morten. That was a fantastic insight.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Well, Morten Brun there, you heard him, Rob, mention the send-off that the Denmark players got from the fans when they set off for London from their team hotel. Well, here's how excited they actually were. So that's as they went into the bus. Then as they made their way down the motorway to the airport, they were going under bridges with Denmark flags.
Oh, I love it.
The fire brigade were out giving them a send-off as well. I mean, as we've heard from our reporter, Sturra Sando, right, that is a country gripped with Euro 2020 fever.
Lindsay, they'll be believing as well, won't they, now?
Of course they will. I mean, look at the journey they've come on. And they do feel like they've got this extra factor. It has been an unusual tournament. You know, from the opening game, what happened with Eriksen, the way the team have pulled together, they've got that added incentive, haven't they, to want to do it. So, yeah, they're going to believe just as much as England do.
OK, final thoughts on Italy's progression to the final. Chris, you want to go first?
Yeah, well, I just still trying to digest what a frantic game it was, really. Two teams, one which will be absolutely devastated to lose a match they didn't deserve to in Spain, and one in Italy who will be delighted. And, you know, they opened it up, right? Brilliantly against Turkey on opening night all those days ago in Rome. And now they are going to be in the final match of Euro 2020 as well.
Lindsay, you were talking about the fact that Spain have grown into the tournament on the day they were probably the better team. Italy have been the better team in most of the games they've played. So do you think that means a lot to them to have fought through that game and got the result?
Yeah, it does. And exactly what you're saying there. I think Spain deserved it on the night, but Italy, they deserve it for the whole tournament. They have been top draw all the way through. So they deserve to be there. I do feel for Morata with that penalty. I do feel for him because he's been hero, then zero, and that was a difficult night for him, I'm sure. But yeah, Italy, I think that they should be in the final, and they've been threatening it since the beginning.
Yeah, first game. First game of the whole tournament against Turkey. 33 games unbeaten now as well for the Ettore. Who are they facing in the final, Chris?
Oh, that is a difficult question. I am going to go England because we heard from a former Denmark hero and even he said that he thought England were going to win.
Lindsay?
England.
Lindsay. Okay, two Englands. All right, Lindsay, thank you very much for being on the show. And Chris, you too. Remember, you can listen to the Euro Show live every match night on the official app or on Euro2020.com. Got the podcast, you can get that via your favourite provider. Join us live on the Euro Show on Wednesday night, just minutes after the final whistle, when we will know who will be playing in Sunday's final. The podcast will be released shortly after. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time to see who will face Italy in the final at Wembley.
Thanks for listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.